It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning. Welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford. I'm your host this morning. And today we're going to be talking about the federal government's Inspector General community. And to help us do that, I'd like to welcome Allison Lerner, the Inspector General at the National Science Foundation. Allison, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And we also have Tom Caulfield, a career professional in the IG community who is currently the executive director at the Council of the Inspector General on Integrity and Efficiency Training Institute. That's known also as the SIGI Training Institute. Tom, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thanks, Bill. There's an awful lot in that word, huh?
There is. But SIGI sounds, it's a lot easier to say.
There
isn't
you
it?
Go.
But, and I would, before we get started with our show this morning, I would like to remind our listeners that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. And if you would like to talk to us today, if you have a question about the Inspector General community, especially because it's changed a lot in the last couple of years with the 2008 Inspector General Act, give us a call. Our toll-free number is 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Tom, why don't we get started with you? Tell us a little bit. You've been in the IG community a long time. What does the Inspector General do in the federal government?
Well, it's amazing because the IG community has matured in so many ways and so much throughout the years. And you referenced probably one of the most exciting thing in the IG community right now is the changes that occurred in 2008. So using that as a baseline, the best thing is right, they're the eyes and ears of the American people to ensure that our tax dollars are being used in the most efficient and effective ways. Our IG community is facing the challenges like the rest of the government and trying to find the smart ways to utilize the dollars, the limited dollars that we have, and do it in the most effective and efficient way.
Well, we often hear waste, fraud, and abuse. I mean, are those just catchwords, or is that what the IG does?
The IGs live on those terms, but it goes so much farther than fraud, waste, and abuse. When you talk about the events that are occurring in today, the waste environments that we see and trying to find more effective ways of doing things. It's funny because people don't realize that sometimes you hear the IG's here to help you and people kind of like shatter. But the truth is the IG's are actually there to work in partnership with the organizations to find the best way to make things efficient.
That may not always be the particular federal employee that the IG is talking to, but it is the agency as a whole.
Exactly correct. Of course, the IG's have investigators and sometimes those investigators have to deal with issues that sometimes they'll put them in the best light, but it happens, and they know that.
Allison, you are the IG at the National Science Foundation. How long have you had that position?
I've had it for a little over 2 years now.
And tell us a little bit about your career in the IG community.
Come the end of this month, I will have spent 20 years in the IG community. I started out at the Department of Commerce IG as an assistant counsel and worked my way up to becoming counsel, a senior executive position. I also held a senior executive position in the audit division for a period over at Commerce, which was a great way of expanding my experience. But being a lawyer in the IG community, you get to work with the auditors, you get to work with the investigators, you learn about everything that we do and contribute in that way. So it was great training to become an inspector general.
And you, I believe, since you're at the National Science Foundation, that's one of those agencies that the president does not appoint.
Correct.
The IG. Tell us a little bit about the president appointing IGs, the agency appointing. How does that appointment process work? How do you get to be an IG?
There are two main ways. There are presidentially appointed IGs, and to become a presidentially appointed IG, you go through the same process that you do for any other presidential appointment. The IG community, SIGI, has a working group that recommends candidates for to the White House for consideration. So that's a unique aspect to the IG community. But the bottom line is, you know, you can be appointed by the president or you can be appointed by the head of the agency. But one of the things the IG Reform Act did in 2008 was go and spell out in the statute what they wanted to see in an IG. And they made clear that IGs are supposed to be appointed without regard to political affiliation and solely on the basis of integrity and demonstrated ability in certain specific areas, you know, accounting, auditing, law, management, that sort of thing. So there was a clear statement that IGs are to be chosen for their skills and their integrity and not their politics.
So so Alice and Tom was talking earlier about somebody who is an IG. They're really there to help the agency. What happens if you as the IG for the National Science Foundation don't see eye to eye with the head of your agency about what's good for the agency? What, how comfortable are you in taking the agency on if you think they're wrong?
You know, you have to be able and willing to do that if you take an IG job. And you know, there are, in the work that we do, inevitably going to be moments where you have to have hard conversations. And so you have to go into the job knowing that the time will come. And you shouldn't take the job if you want to make friends. That doesn't mean you have to make enemies. Hard conversations are best held when there is mutual respect. And so you work in the times when you're not having the hard conversations to build the trust and build the respect so that when you have to have, when you have to say the things that the people in power don't want to hear, you know, they will be more inclined to listen to you. But the bottom line for people in my job is that's what we get paid money to do. Is at certain moments to speak truth to power and to bring up issues that an agency might otherwise not want to confront.
Yeah, Tom, how many IGs are there? Does every agency have one?
Well, almost pretty much now. There's actually 73 statutory IGs within the federal government, meaning that they exist because of the IG Act. You know, when you step back and you look at the military command IGs, you look at non-statutory IGs, you talk of state and the county IGs, you start putting all that together. You're talking several hundred inspector generals. Florida alone has 67 inspector generals, now none of which are at the federal level.
Who does now?
Florida.
The state of Florida.
Sure does. And each of their agencies down there has them. In the federal government, recently, even in the intelligence community, they now have inspector generals that fall under the IG Act, all of which have the same responsibilities and all of which come underneath the SIGI now.
Yeah, whether they're appointed by the agency head or whether they're appointed by the president, they all have the same level of responsibility.
Exactly correct. And the appointments, as much as they may be from different entities, they still fall under the same authorities and the same responsibilities in so many ways. Even the removal of an inspector general all comes under the same guidance and direction.
Right. I'd like to ask kind of a general question. Maybe both of you can take a stab at answering this. I've always heard, and my experience is, that the main functions an IG office does, what they have an audit function and an investigation function, and they're very different. Tell us a little bit about what those two functions do and what the difference is.
Well, and they are different. The IG Act makes clear that IGs are supposed to have an assistant IG for investigations and one for audits. And, you know, in one respect, they're similar. They follow the money. In much of what they do. The audit folks follow it more directly. They perform audits of contracts, financial assistance awards, to ensure that money has been used for the purposes for which it was given and that it was spent in accordance with the terms of the award.
For example, the National Science Foundation, your agency gives a lot of scientific grants to universities and colleges.
Yes.
You would look at that to make sure that they actually spent the money for what
for the
they
purposes
were given.
And in accordance with the terms and conditions of the grant and the OMB circulars that govern how the money is supposed to be spent. We also, auditors also sometimes, you know, the IG Act has two main prongs. We're supposed to prevent fraud, waste, and abuse and promote economy and efficiency. So sometimes you have performance auditors who will go and look at programs and operations within the agency, not so much to see how money is spent, but to see how the programs are operated and recommend efficiencies and improvements in those areas. So that's what the audit group focuses. They also look a lot at the internal control environment of the agency, because if you don't have sufficient integrity in your internal controls, then you're much more likely to be susceptible to fraud, waste, and abuse. So that's what the auditors focus on. The investigators are much more interested in criminal and civil matters.
And employee misconduct as well. It's been my experience.
Exactly. I was going to, and administrative as well. Right. You know, we start with the big ones, the fraud, waste and abuse, the False Claims Act violations, false statements, the criminal violations, criminal conflicts of interest. But, you know, many situations can have criminal, civil, and administrative ramifications. And if you can't proceed for whatever reason, criminally or civilly, frequently you have administrative remedies that are available to you. And IG investigators work those types of cases too. And then some IGs, like my office, have unique things that they perform because of the unique aspects of the agency. We perform research misconduct investigations in our administrative group because we have specific requirements to do that through the research misconduct regulation at the National Science Foundation. So some agencies do special things by virtue of, some OIGs do special things by virtue of where they're located.
Yeah, we're talking about the Inspector General community on Fed Talk. Our guests are Allison Lerner, the Inspector General at the National Science Foundation, and Tom Caulfield, the Director of the SIGI Training Institute. This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. GEICO now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. GEICO, the Government Employees Insurance Company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about GEICO's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, your host. We're talking today to Allison Lerner, the Inspector General of the National Science Foundation, and Tom Caulfield, the Executive Director of the SIGI Training Institute, which is essentially the training institute for the Inspector General community. If you have a question or a comment, you can give us a call. Our toll-free number is 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Tom, before the break, Allison was talking about these audit function and the investigation function. So you're a federal employee. You're not an IG employee, and you're out there, and the IG comes knocking on your door. How different is it if it's an audit versus if it's an investigation? And what should you expect as a federal employee?
Sure. I'm going to add one more business, and that's the inspection side, because something that we definitely have seen improvement is the inspection side. So we actually have three. But if you take the audit and the inspection side, they're predominantly looking at processes and efficiencies, and the investigators are looking at some type of allegation of misconduct. So the fundamental difference is when an investigator comes, he'll specifically or she'll specifically be asking you about an individual or will be asking you about potential violation of a process or somebody who's doing something that you may have knowledge of and not even sometimes aware of it. And that's a kind of important thing. A lot of times, investigators, regardless if they're IG investigators, just federal agents, a lot of times they interview people. Many of these people don't even realize that what they witness or what they saw or what they heard is somehow linked to a potentially criminal violation. So when an investigator comes in, they're asking questions specifically about an individual, and they're looking at if somebody violated a law, statute, regulation. When it comes to an audit staff or an inspector, but they're coming in, they're going to talk to individuals also, but they're not going to ask about individuals' performance. They're going to ask about how a job is done. They're going to ask you how a process is done. They're trying to look at the big picture snapshot. And like sometimes I'll describe it, if you put the two different together, a general practitioner, it's kind of like an auditor or inspector. They're coming in, they can get anybody who walks in the door, they could talk about a whole series of different illnesses or potential problems. Where an inspector is kind of like a surgeon. They're coming in and they're going to ask about a very specific type of individual, about a very specific thing, and trying to cut out somebody who potentially could be doing something improper.
I sometimes hear federal employees will say, I don't want to get involved. I really don't want to be a part of that process. And I don't want to answer those questions because I'm afraid some, you know, those people are my friends. I think they'll get angry with me. What's your response to that, Tom?
You know, it's funny because there's actually research that shows there's three principal reasons why people don't get involved. And you've hit on one of them. I don't want to be a squealer. I don't want to be somebody that whistleblows on somebody. Second thing they'll say is I don't want to get involved because what happens if I'm wrong? I have to work with that person. And the third thing is just people just sometimes just want to be away from anything that causes conflict. I when you talk about a serious violation of a law or serious violations of criminal activity, I'll remind people of a couple of things. One is you're coming to work every day and you're doing a darn good job. You're probably, if that person's taking time off or they own a business or they're cheating somebody, you're probably overcompensating in the hours that you have to work. You are doing more work than may be necessary because of that person's lack of due diligence and responsibility. That's fundamentally the direct impact on you. If you want to step back and look at the organization itself, you know, there is enough research to show that anywhere between 7 to 9% of revenues is fraudulently taken from both corporations and government. 9%. When you look at the cost of what corporations invest, that's a lot of money being stolen. And bottom line, I hate to say this, and people forget it sometimes, when you talk about fraud, you're talking about a theft of tax dollars, a theft of time, a theft from a corporation or the government.
Well, I have to tell you, that's a really good reason why people should want to cooperate. But here's what I tell my clients who don't want to come into the IG. I say, well, you don't have to go. You can always resign your employment.
Right.
I mean, as a federal employee, these individuals do have an obligation to cooperate with the process. And if they don't, that can be grounds for removal. Do you ever find yourself in a position, Tom, where you have to actually be that firm with somebody?
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, yes, it does come down to that. And fortunately, with Ellison being a lawyer in the IG community for years, she would have been somebody we would have turned to immediately and basically got legal advice on the proper way of doing it. But it does happen. The lack of cooperation, the lack of due diligence on those people's part. And those people, sometimes they do walk out and they can be walked off because of failure. And Allison, I know you've had some examples of that.
Yeah. Allison, tell me about that. I guess the question, because Tom raised it and he presented it like he's doing an investigation. And you're just somebody who witnessed something. Mm-hmm. And there's a difference between being a witness in an investigation and talking to an investigator and actually being the subject
Absolutely.
Of the investigation. Talk a little bit about that, especially since your experience as an IG counsel before you got your present job.
Okay, but let me just say, I haven't worn my lawyer hat in 2 years now. So some things are getting a little stale with me. But the main thing is, you know, obviously if someone is a subject of an investigation, they have a right against self-incrimination. And they're informed of rights by an investigator. But anyone who is not a subject, a witness, has a responsibility, as you noted, as a federal employee to cooperate with the IG. And most agencies have formalized this responsibility to cooperate in the administrative documents that pertain to their staff. So over the years, there have been innumerable instances where there's people balk, especially when our investigators walk in, but they don't balk for long because we usually have a very strong internal basis, whether it's a formal document or just a practice that's understood by people above the folks that are not wanting to talk. But they don't balk for long because it becomes, you know, clear both from what they hear from our people and what they hear from their management that they have a responsibility to cooperate with our office.
And I think Allison brings up a very important point. Mm-hmm. From my experience over 30 years, the majority of government people, once you get past them realizing, especially when they're witnesses, hey, listen, mm-hmm. this is what this person's doing, and you give them some true indication of it because of the factual points, or the truth is they've actually seen it, they actually don't resist talking about it because they do recognize the importance of providing that information.
That's right. I think most people do, and that's those people that feel threatened somehow that this could hurt them.
And one other thing I would just point out in the context of when people feel uncomfortable talking, sometimes they feel uncomfortable talking because we're coming to them and asking questions about people who are senior to them. And they worry about what actions could be taken to them for cooperating with our
office.
And
they're worried if their senior people learn that they ratted on them.
Exactly.
How do you protect
the IG Act makes clear that we have the ability to keep confidential the names and the information of people who cooperate with us to the maximum extent possible. Now, if a case goes to litigation, then there are we're going to have to turn over certain.
Yeah, there's some due process concerns.
Exactly, there are due process concerns. Yeah. But short of a legal responsibility to turn the material over, IGs do everything they can to protect the confidentiality of people who work with them. Because obviously, if people don't feel that they can trust us and that we'll protect that, then they're not going to talk to us. So it's in every inspector general's best interest to ensure that the confidentiality of folks that communicate with them is protected.
And is that communicated to potential witnesses
yes.
that are uncomfortable?
Yeah.
It comes to the confidence of the community mm-hmm. in the Inspector General's office, not just in what they do, but the confidence in their abilities and their professionalism is critical to the survivability of it. Mm-hmm. And protection of information and protection of people is embedded into the core approaches, process, and policies within any IG's office because of the importance of those people.
One of the things that I think is really important, particularly for managers, supervisors, and agency lawyers, agency HR specialists to know and understand about what the Inspector General does is when they see somebody engaging in criminal activity, mm-hmm. and they don't necessarily know it's criminal,
right.
they start to investigate. And there's a real potential danger there.
Yeah.
That could you talk? One of you talk about that. What, how that's a problem, and what this federal manager, HR specialist, lawyer, what they should do if they see somebody doing like lying on their travel voucher, a time and attendance fraud, all of those things are potential crimes.
Right.
What should they do, Tom?
Well, it's interesting because this actually happens quite common. A good intended manager, a good intended supervisor sees something which, as they're responsible to do, is check it out. If they see something's inappropriate, they're as good managers, good supervisors, they're supposed to look at it. But there's a line that you can't cross because what people don't realize that even though you're doing with good intentions, you have a responsibility to still protect that person's rights or do things or collect evidence in a proper way. A perfect example is if a person you walk up to and you start asking them direct questions and you believe that they've actually cheated on a voucher, they've done something as illegal as that, you realize you're putting at risk the particular case. So what I always tell managers or supervisors, be a good, responsible manager, do the right thing and start looking at the things. But at that time when you really believe you have something, you contact a professional. And every inspector general's office has got posters, has got hotlines, it's got information solicitation methods that they use in order to ensure that the managers are aware of it and who they should call and when they should call in on it.
Allison, how does that work? I know Title 28 of the United States Code has a very specific provision that says that the IG has a specific hotline to the Department of Justice on these criminal cases.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work on the inside? And how quickly can a manager if they think there's something wrong, how quickly do they get an answer so that they can deal with that employee who may have engaged in misconduct?
It really depends on the precise nature and circumstances of the case. And there are limits sometimes, and it's frustrating for people who reach out to inspectors general. We can take in a lot of information, but once we open an investigation, there are real limits on what we can tell anyone about the status of that investigation. So, We do try to work with managers if there's an investigation of one of their employees and they need to take action. We'll coordinate with them because obviously they have management responsibilities that they need to do. We have an ongoing investigation and we don't want to be working at cross purposes. So we'll try to coordinate to the extent possible. But there's a lot of what we know when there's an ongoing investigation that we can't share externally. So we try to do our work as quickly as we can. So that we have a final outcome that can be communicated, whether it's an indictment or a proceeding in criminal or civil court, or an administrative case that gets referred back to the agency to take action.
And then if it gets referred back, it's because an assistant U.S. attorney has declined
exactly.
prosecution.
Right.
And then you can require the employee as a condition of their employment to answer questions.
Yes.
Because they're no longer in any threat yeah. of being criminally prosecuted.
Exactly. And when one of those types of cases is done, we pull together our findings, we make a recommendation to to the agency, usually a very, very broad one, appropriate administrative action if we think it's warranted. And then it's up to the agency to decide what action is appropriate and proceed with a disciplinary process.
We're talking about the Inspector General community. This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. Now, this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact Geico. Tell them, Mike.
Hey folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk, and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Bill Bransford, and I'm joined in the studio by Allison Lerner, the IG at the National Science Foundation, and Tom Caulfield of the Council of the Inspector General on Integrity and Efficiency Training Institute. And that long word there, a long phrase that is also called SIGI. If anybody hears SIGI, that's this council. But Tom, tell us a little bit about your training institute, and then we'll talk about SIGI later, a little bit later.
But I'll continue to use the word SIGI because it's much easier to say.
Right.
We're pretty excited because actually prior to 2008, when the IG Reform Act was authorized, the existence of training for the IG community is very separate and very staggered. A few minutes ago, Allison and I talked about the different types of business audits, inspections, and investigations. And unfortunately, in the IG community, whose economy, efficiency, effectiveness didn't really have what some people could argue was an efficient way of doing it. Because
in fact, I think there was a GAO study that said they weren't doing a particularly effective job. It's better now, right?
It's much better now. At least I hope so, as executive director. What we basically do is we've merged all three of the academies that once were separate, and we brought them under one. So now we actually have an IG Criminal Investigator Academy, and obviously that's where our investigators are trained. Our criminal investigators and our administrative investigators, our analysts. We also have our Audit Inspection Evaluations Academy, and we have our Management and Leadership Support Academy. Our IG criminal investigators are down at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, and I know that there's actually been some times on the talk show here we've had members of Federal Law Enforcement Training Center up here, and they're one of the many campuses down there. Our Audit Inspection Evaluations is up in the D.C. area. And our leadership mission support is through partnership with several universities and a couple of commercial companies that do executive leadership. Some of the probably most exciting things that's happening right now is we've developed an approach to try and move what traditional academies are taking advantage of, and that's some of the webinars and various technologies. And we're also fortunate that we call upon senior executives within the IG profession, people like myself, Allison, have been around for a couple of days, and they're starting to be involved with developing new courses and specialized courses. The IG community continuously shifts to try and stay what the risk is. And today it's contract fraud and grant fraud because of the billions upon billions, hundreds of billions of dollars to spend. So the IG community is shifting continuously. When we had a threat against this country, our IG community focused a lot on our protections of our forces, our services, our equipment. So we continuously shift. And fortunately, the Academy has adopted a methodology to allow them to shift, stay current, and bring real-time specialized training to all of our professions.
One of the overall issues right now, Tom, with training is funding. The appropriation process in Congress brings a lot of uncertainty to executives in the executive branch across the board. Is that true in the IG community as well?
The IG community is no different than any other government community. We all have responsibility, and you're exactly correct. And you know, and as somebody that don't agree with this, but sometimes training is one of the first things that people need to cut. They want to cut it because they don't see the tangible evidence of it.
Well, you've been doing training this certainly since the SIGI was created in 2008, and then even before then, there was other training programs. And it seems to me that do you have the ability to show like tangible results that in fact performance is better because training occurs?
Well, it's interesting you ask that, because one of the things that for the first time we're putting in place is a 3-level and a 4-level tier feedback on how you measure training. You know, traditionally training is a person goes to a government training and they sit there and they listen, and then somebody hands them a brochure and says, you fill this out and we'll give you the certificate. Well, that's a nice way to get an evaluation of that training initially, but there's multiple levels of doing that. And so there is, and the university's been doing this for years on how to demonstrate the return on the investment.
It's the metrics.
It's the metrics. Right. And I hate to say this, but some of the best information is multi-tier metrics and evaluations. How is that done? Going back to the managers, going back 6-7 months later and saying, did you use this? Demonstrate to us that you actually used it. And that's how you demonstrate your return on the investment of education. But it's interesting, because one of the things I always remind executives is when you bring together individuals from 73 different agencies, how do you measure what they shared in the Rolodex and the expansion? As every day percentages of our audits, inspections, and evaluations, they're working side by side with other agencies. That level of familiarity all lends itself to the efficiency. I can measure if my training allowed them to become greater knowledge. But how do you measure the efficiency that's been added, because they now have a better understanding of each other's approaches?
So, Allison, as an inspector general, you have how many employees?
About 85. At the
and
press.
So do you, I think as an IG in charge of those employees, do you value training?
Absolutely. It's critical.
And what about Tom's Institute?
We're supportive of Tom, and we're grateful that he's there, because what we do is somewhat of a niche business, and it's not like you can just rush out to the public market and get training in some of the narrow areas that we need it. And so I think it's very important to have Tom there who can pull together those specific concerns that we have and tailor training to the specific needs of the organization.
Do you have a sense that this training has made a difference in the overall quality of the inspector general employees?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we get employees, who come in new, and we have to shape them, and we have to build them, and we have to allow them to continuously develop. And having good, strong, robust training opportunities for them is one way of doing that. And that builds them, and that helps build our organization.
You know, Bill, some of your examples even demonstrate the uniquenesses of IG's. You know, talking to fellow employees, you talked about some of the legal aspects. Mm-hmm. Our law schools are not teaching the IG Reform Act. Our mm-hmm. law schools are not teaching the unique accesses of authorities.
And most of your auditors are accountants, aren't they, mm-hmm. Allison? Or
most of them are accountants.
And so do they teach that in an accounting school?
No.
How to be an IG-type auditor?
No.
So that's something that has to be specifically taught. And so it's definitely something that's needed, and hopefully you'll manage to find the funding. It seems to me to be paradoxical. If you're the organization that roots out waste, fraud, and abuse, to cut your training means you're not going to be able to do as much of that. And yet that seems to be the first place that politicians look for reform.
Yeah, it's a realization that we all face, but the appreciation and their feedback and the return and the recognition of specialization is what allows us to continue to operate. And I'm fortunate that I have the support of the 73 inspector generals without exception, and people like Allison and so many of the other inspector generals all recognize the importance of it. So I have to tell you, as much as maybe the big picture will try and cut training, our inspector general community respects it, appreciates it, and continues to fund it. And that's a great opportunity for myself.
So, Allison, I think when you were talking a little bit about your career, You mentioned you served a little bit of time in the audit community. And
yes.
You told us from your counsel experience a lot about investigations and rights of employees and obligations and that. It seems to me that the audit process is maybe even potentially bigger than that, because you've probably got a lot of sacred cows that you have to go over, and the sacred cows that are inefficient. I mean, it's one of the tenets of bureaucracy. Is a word I don't like to use, but it implies that the negative aspects of a government organization, things that get entrenched and it's hard to break them up. Does the audit community look at things like that and suggest reforms? How does that work?
Absolutely. I mean, the audit community, most inspectors general in their audit division, you know, use a risk-based approach to auditing. You know, there's more things to audit in any given year than you could ever possibly attack. So you have to have some way of narrowing down where you go and look. And so you examine risk in your organization. You factor in external stakeholders' concerns, hot issues of the moment, and you try and come up with the most important places for you to be looking at present. And then you go out and obviously sometimes you're touching things that have a lot of people that support them, but that need to be looked at and that maybe need to be done a little bit differently. And one of the challenges our auditors can face is they go into an organization and they start asking questions about these sacred cows, and they ask for documents and people don't want to give it to them. And one of the things the IG Act does is make clear that when we are conducting our work, looking at the programs and operations of the agencies in which we're embedded, we have access to all documents. And so it's important for people to realize when the IG shows up wearing the audit hat, not the investigative hat, if we ask you for documents, you got to give them to us.
You get resistance on that?
Yes, we absolutely do. And it tends, you know, it ebbs and flows. Lots of times when you have people who are coming in who are new to government, they've never heard of an inspector general. They've come from an environment where you protect documents from
proprietary information from corporations. For example, the Food and Drug Administration at HHS gets proprietary information from drug companies. The IRS protects taxpayer information.
Exactly. Department of Commerce protects census information, those sorts of things. But you know, if you're the IG at the Department of Commerce, you've got access to census information. If you're the IG at HHS, you've got access to HHS documents. Not that there may not be some concerns about where you look at them, but you obviously have to protect them once you have them. But the IG Act gives straight access to the documents. And so that's something that federal employees need to be aware of, because you can spend a lot of time and energy fighting, but ultimately we're gonna get the documents.
So Tom and Allison, I'd like you both to comment on this. How real are the savings, both the audit and investigation process, the IG community? How real are those savings? And does Congress know this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they are real. And Congress gets informed of, you know, each IG does a semiannual report twice a year where they put out all of the both the audit and the investigative related savings that they have. Once a year, the IG community pulls all those numbers together and reports those to Congress. So the information is out there.
And
it's real.
We have the annual report to the President of the United States, where it reflects exactly what you're talking about, is how many audits, inspection, evaluations, and what the research, what the savings is, the cost estimates. But it's interesting because the report that goes both to the President and Congress has two sets of numbers. It has actually what the IGs themselves believe it, but then it also has what the managers of that same agency also believes it saves. And believe it or not, sometimes the agencies will actually say that the reports save more than the IGs actually predict that. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because the IGs are going to use the number calculations more directly linked to what the evidence and what they've collected and what their field work has shown, where the agency themselves can use a little bit more subjectivity.
Well, it strikes me that as you hear the political debates unfold, that story is not told very often, and it sort of gets hidden. And is there something more the IG community can do to tout its successes?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because one of the things that the SIGI is now responsible to do is to do exactly what you're talking about, and that is to promote and to actually provide more of that information. one of the strategic plans or strategic objectives for the IG community and the SIGI is to do exactly what you're talking about, is create new ways. Instead of waiting for information to be pulled out in today's technology, so start pushing more and more information out there to allow our taxpayers, allow the politicians, our administration to all understand the hundreds of billions of dollars that are annually reported as savings.
Hundreds of billions?
Yes.
I know that...
Actually, I think it was probably 80. How much was it?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's in the multiple billions of dollars.
So as you're dealing with the fact that Congress keeps saying waste, fraud, and abuse, and they cut your funding, as they're cutting everyone's funding, can you point to, like, give us another IG employee and we'll bring you a return on investment of so many dollars? Is there data like that? I know the IRS has said, like, every dollar we spend on employees, we bring $20 of revenue in. Can the IG community do that?
I think different IG communities can probably do that, depending upon, because there is some uniquenesses in their missions. And it's hard, and IGs always get concerned about trying to only demonstrate their value through a dollar returns, because so many times it's adding efficiencies, or in some cases it's trying to help protect information, because the IGs can go everywhere in their audits to protecting security systems for the networks, to various other things. So you're correct, and IG could do that, but in reality, we want to just add efficiency.
It's different within the IG. Yeah.
Exactly.
Community.
And when you focus, as IGs are supposed to focus on preventing fraud, it's very difficult to quantify what you've prevented, but there is a real impact there.
Okay. All right. We're going to stop to hear a word from our sponsor. When we return, we'll wrap up our discussion about the IG community with Tom Caulfield and Allison Lerner. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing, or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to Geico. So no matter if you're blue or red or, in my case, green. If you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, contact Geico and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford. I'm talking to Allison Lerner and Tom Caulfield, both career professionals in the Inspector General community. If you have a question or a comment, call us, please. Our toll-free number is 1-877-936-9333 or email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So Tom, the IG community, gotten better and better at watching their agencies, going after employees who are problems, either because they've committed a crime or employee misconduct. What happens when the IG community, someone in the IG community, goes astray? I mean, is there any process to look at that? Is anybody looking at the IGs?
Well, actually, there is. The IG Reform Act actually specifically has some language that talks about that. But when you talk about IG employees, you want to separate them into two. There are those that are just seniors, like you referenced, IGs, the deputy IGs, and senior executives. And there's a very specific independent entity which is responsible to look at allegations for them, and it falls within the integrity committee of the IG and part of the FBI. When it's other than a senior executive, when it's the everyday auditor, investigator, inspector, then there's a totally different process. And the way that traditionally works is they'll get an independent entity to actually do the investigation or look at the allegation against them. The posting of the allegations and the allegations against inspector generals or their senior executives, for example, we completely take it out of the IG community and allow members of the FBI to actually do that.
The FBI does that?
Yes.
Not. No. Now, when I hear SIGI, sometimes I hear that in day-to-day context in my law practice, that that refers to the actual people that are doing investigations against Inspector General employees. Is that correct or wrong?
That's actually wrong. Okay. The SIGI has a separate committee, which is the Integrity Committee, which falls within the SIGI by just definition as committees. But in reality, that's actually an FBI entity. It's not the part of the SIGI. And it's housed by senior FBI people that are actually responsible to do that.
Right.
Allison
right.
has actually particular information when it comes to knowledge about that.
Well, right. Well,
tell us about that, Allison.
Well, that's precisely how things work. If a complaint comes in relating to a senior, an IG or someone of one of his direct reports, it goes over to the FBI group if it appears to have merit, and they conduct an investigation. There are specific requirements contained in the IG Reform Act for how information is provided. If a finding is ultimately shared with members of Congress. And the chair of the SIGI committee and the leadership of the agency that employs the IG, but if you're talking about the lower level folks, that's where SIGI may play a role in bringing together, if there is an allegation involving a lower level IG person that the IG doesn't feel that their staff can do, they will coordinate and find another inspector general that can come in and do handle an investigation of that nature for them.
So what else does SIGI do? Does SIGI have its own staff, or is it created from like people that have collateral duties within the IG community?
Actually, it's both. There is a permanent SIGI presence. I actually am a permanent SIGI employee. And we have a handful of them, but the majority do come from rotation. It is a small entity. You're only talking 25, 30 people when it comes to it, because so much of the work, if not all of the work, comes from a partnership with the IGs themselves. The responsibility of the SIGI is really twofold. Each independent IG, like Allison, they have a full autonomy when it comes to their agency. But what sometimes doesn't happen the most efficiently is when they have to go across agencies. Right. So the SIGI, by legislation, is required to find entities or activities that go across the government to add county efficiency and effectiveness. The SIGI helps bring together a sampling of IGs to work on an independent effort. That's one of the primary principles of the SIGI. It's to basically take, now the SIGI doesn't oversee any of the IGs. They're independent. But what the SIGI does is help lend itself to add economy efficiency effectiveness across the government. And second is the part that falls with my responsibility, and that's the training and education. Again, that gets across the community, all 12,000-plus employees.
And what happened? I mean, how does the IG community, we're talking about allegations of misconduct, but what about just in general, whether you're doing a good job or not, whether you're being effective? Does the IG community have a way to look at within itself at other IGs? How does that happen?
The IGs have, be it audit inspections, evaluations, each of them have a peer review process. And, for example, in the audit community, it's every 3 years. It's mandated they have to have an independent assessment. So another thing that the SIGI will help do is coordinate and do exactly what you're doing, is the scheduling of, to make sure that an independent inspector general's office will come in and they will look at, through various checklists, process, procedures, and standards, all that's publicly available, and they look to ensure that that inspector general's office is running at the level of efficiency they're supposed to. Same with the investigations and same with the inspection community.
Right. And one of the things SIGI makes sure is that the reviewing IG that comes in doesn't have any conflict. You don't have an IG doing an audit peer review of someone that did an investigative peer review of them so that maybe they have an axe to grind or something like that. SIGI makes sure that the people that come in are independent and have no reason for a perception of a conflict. And then the peer reviews are undertaken. And it's tremendously important that we get those peer reviews done to ensure that we're working to the standards that we need to do, because that's one of the ways that people can trust our work is that we do work to specific standards and hold ourselves accountable.
So Allison and Tom, I've talked to a lot of people about the 2008 reform legislation within the IG community. Do you both feel that there's been a significant improvement? Things are better now? with this reform?
Yeah, I think, you know, that the Reform Act did wonderful things to shore up the independence of inspectors general and to clarify matters and to improve transparency as well. So I think that it was a great thing for the community that after a lot of time and effort, those changes were able to take place. And that we have, you know, statutory statements about the qualifications for inspectors general, how you can remove an inspector general, clarity with regard to an inspector general's budget, and very important things for inspectors general.
And what about the IG hotline? That's I guess a lot of employees see that sign, IG, report waste, fraud, and abuse, call this number, the IG hotline. Do you have one at NSF?
Oh, absolutely. I think every IG does. And they're very important. We train our staffs to make sure that they can handle the calls that come in.
And if you call the hotline, does someone answer?
Yep.
Or do you get a voicemail?
At our place, somebody answers.
Okay. Tom, how important have you found the hotline in your work as in the inspector general community?
Well, it's critical. The hotline goes well beyond just a phone call now in technology. You know, one of the offices that I belonged to previously, the majority of information came in through the email. We had IGs actually, with the assistance of technology, has been able to set up anonymous emails where it actually can bounce off of multiple servers and get there.
Isn't there a problem with credibility and reliability if somebody's anonymous on the hotline?
Well, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, we have people that do like to do that. But a disciplined and a well-trained inspector general's community tests it out. People, sometimes there's a misconception because we live in this 30 minutes of a TV where you have to solve a crime in 30 minutes.
An hour sometimes. but it's still very short. Right.
Very short. In reality,
it only takes place usually over the course of 1 or 2 days, right?
Right.
But that's not my experience with investigations.
But when a complaint comes in, every IG's office immediately will behind the scenes test it out. And normally, 9 out of 10 times, an IG will not even go out and start doing interviews until they start pulling back the records, the data, and the information to see if there's credibility to it.
Right.
At that point, an inspector general's office, be it investigations, audit, or inspections, will start talking to interviews. And again, they start out very broad. So we would love every person to come forward and allow to have a conversation, and because it's so important. So many times we report things, we need more details.
And Allison, what do you do for that employee who calls the hotline, gives his or her name, and the supervisor finds out, and they feel that they're retaliated against? Can you help that person?
We do everything that we can. Obviously, any employee who feels that they've been retaliated against has the option of going to the Office of Special Counsel under most circumstances. But if someone's been retaliated against for coming to an IG, IGs take that very seriously and will do everything they can to push back at the agency and ensure that no retaliatory actions are taken against
Would you go so far as to actually kind of look into it a little bit and see whether there's merit to the claim of retaliation and then go to management?
Absolutely.
Which would be far speedier probably than going to the Office of Special Counsel.
Right.
There are various IG's office or agencies actually that have specific regulations that protect exactly what you're talking about is individuals who come and report things, not just their management, but to the IG's office. And if there is a concern or an allegation of retaliation, the IGs actually have investigative authorities to go in and look and see if that was done, because we need to protect those people.
Right.
All right. So is there like an overall hotline number or is it every agency?
Each agency has their own. And most IGs, if you call the wrong one, will do their darndest to route you to the correct one.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank Allison Lerner, the Inspector General of the National Science Foundation. Allison, thank you so much for being here and providing that insight.
Thank you.
And Tom Caulfield, the Executive Director of the SIGI Training Institute, which is the overall training for the IG community. Thank you, Tom, for being here.
And thank you, Bill.
And that's all the time we have for Fed Talk. And I'd like to invite everyone to join us in a couple of weeks for our next presentation. Thank you.